Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2542. That's 2542. Tonight we're going to have a therapist that's going to be coming on. We're waiting for her to call in. And her name is Melody J. Anderson. She's a licensed social worker and also a child abuse survivor and therapist with 28 years of practice, of private practice. She has a lot. There's a lot more that I could read, and I'm not going to do that. But anyway, my name is Carol Levine. I am vice president of NASCA. And so at any rate, what I'm going to do is read the mission statement, and hopefully she'll come on by then. If she does not, there is so much to speak about that I'm not worried about it. Anyway, I see that my co-host is here. Hold on a second. Is that you, sweetie? Yes, it is, Lori. Lori from Calgary. Did you get an answer?
No answer.
Oh, okay. So. All right, okay.
Hopefully she's all right.
That's my exact thoughts, because I know that she'd be one that would want to come on. But anyway, all right, listen. Let me, first of all, read the mission statement, and then Lori and I are going to have a conversation. I've known Lori the longer I've known Bill, and I was on her show first, for God's sake. And so anyway, that's I've been on the radio, around 13 years, something like that. And then Lori, decided to do something else, and now she's back, and I'm so happy she's back, because she is one of my favorite people. Yeah, me too.
And I feel the same way about you, Carol.
I know you do. We're like sisters. Some way, we'll get to meet in person. I'd like that better. But anyway, okay, let me read the mission statement, and we'll go from there. We have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. You know, I'll tell you what, Lori, you know, right there in our mission statement, there's even a lot to speak about there, because there's just so much going on in this world, you know, and right now with the COVID. I know everybody's talking about the COVID out there. I have many names for it. I said that the other night, and I mean it. I do have many names for it. But anyway, the point is, you know, it's stunting a lot of things. You know, it's stopping people from living, actually, in the ways that we were used to living, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was going out a lot more, doing a lot of things, and doing a lot of work. On the outside of NASCA and so forth. And everything is closed. And 1 minute the border from, say, like from New Jersey to Pennsylvania is open, then it's shut. And, well, I don't know what they're doing, or you have to be essential workers, things like that. And it's just causing so much grief. And one thing I'm noticing, Well, one thing I've noticed recently is depression is big time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's big time. And I was on the phone at 5, was it? Yeah, I received a phone call at 5 o'clock this morning, and I was on the phone with that person, but I'd also been on the phone several times throughout the course of the day. And some of the things are situational, as I call it, with the depression, and understandable. But with the others, it was it's just the way that we're living. They feel so alone right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah.
They don't know how to handle it.
This is,
you know,
I mean, it's a huge problem. I think it's, you know, I was thinking about that actually today. I actually kind of been sort of thinking about it almost every day because I'm very isolated myself. And I'm
mm-hmm.
like, you know, for people that aren't used to being isolated, it would be a real problem. You know, if there's, I mean, there are many people who, you know, over, you know, in their lifetime have really never been isolated or been alone all that much, you know. And so
yeah.
I think for people like that, it would be a real hardship and, you know, hard to deal with on a daily basis, for sure. I'm used to kind of being isolated, and so I'm somewhat used to this, except for I would think it's worse now because, like you were saying, Carol, I mean, everything is shut down. You can't do this. You can't go here. It's a very strange world we're living in right now. That's for sure.
Yeah, it absolutely
yeah.
is. It is. And,
yeah.
you know, if you're a person.
Like it's normal. Oh, it's fine. It's like, no,
yeah,
it's not
baloney.
Fine.
baloney. I don't believe that.
No,
it's
but that's kind of how they want people to think about it. Like, it's okay. Just put your mask on and wash your hands and you'll be fine and life is good. And it's like,
yeah.
what are you saying? You know. This is nothing like it was pre-March or whatever of 2019. Mm-hmm. We were all doing normal things before that. So it is very, very strange, absolutely.
Well, it absolutely mm-hmm. is. And, you know, to try and to adjust to the new way of life, if this is the way it's going to be, I mean, yes, they're talking about vaccines, and I suppose I'll stick my arm out. I hope that's the only thing I have to stick out. But anyway, stick my arm out. And say, okay, go ahead, you know, when the time comes. And because I don't know, I just don't know how I feel about certain things, you know. Maybe it's not a good vaccine. Maybe it's some people do have, you know, reactions and they're not pleasant. Maybe they're really, really bad, you know, reactions. Depends on the individual, the person, if they have precondition, you know, the conditions of this and that. And
mm-hmm.
is it going to affect it in a negative way? I mean, there's all kinds of things that go through people's minds. And they do, you know, and they absolutely do, you know, question this. And I understand that. You know, it doesn't matter whether mm-hmm. you're Democrat or Republican. That has nothing to do with anything. It's just, you know, thoughts that go through people's minds. How do we know how safe it is? This vaccine
mm-hmm.
that's coming out, and should I or shouldn't I, and all this other stuff, and or should
There's
I just keep my mask on? Yeah. There
There's
absolutely
a lot of fear
is.
Surrounding it. And I've seen some things out there about the people that did the preliminary trials of those vaccines,
mm-hmm.
of some of those vaccines, and some of the stuff you just don't know. Like I was looking at it with the knowledge that there's a lot of fake news on the internet. And, you know, in the news. So I'm kind of like, who knows if that's really real or not. But they're saying there was huge complications with several people that took it. And it's like, you know, I'm like, who knows what's reality anymore and what's not? Because we're not being given the truth most of the time. I think some of the time there's some truth out there. Not all the time.
Some of the time. You have to look and see, you know, is this real? Is this not real? Is this true? Is it not true? You know? And these are the things that are depressing people, too, because they don't know, you know, what to believe,
right.
what not to believe. And, again, it has nothing to do with politics in the sense of whether you're Democrat or Republican. It's just that this is something that we can't see. We can't feel it. Until it zaps you, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But how do you
it's
fight
scary.
Something like this? It is.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel so sorry because, when it's like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning and you're trying to talk people down out of their fear, we don't have concrete answers. Not for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm noticing that it is sparking, you know, people have the PTSD to begin with. So whatever
mm-hmm.
it is they have before, all right, they're you know, all of a sudden it's amplified, you know, because out of fear, which is very
mm-hmm.
real and genuine, this fear, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really a scary, scary thing. But I think we should speak a little bit about depression, you know, like the signs of depression. Because people out there, you have family members. Bill was here. He just, there he is. I'll bring him on. One second.
What?
Hello,
you guys,
Bill.
Don't
how
want
are
me
you?
On the show? You don't want me on the show?
Hi, Bill.
I don't care whether you're there or not.
Wow.
Well, you're only going to give me a titanium watch, not a gold watch. See, I got you. Oh, God, what a conversation we had.
I'm putting you back on topic because the things
yeah.
you're discussing are not NASCA topics, but I can make it one, and that is that, you know, for my decision's an easy one to make. I'm all about doing whatever gives me the least amount of trauma. And, you know, trauma, we are all experiencing the trauma of the unknown right now.
Mm-hmm.
We do, but there are things we do know. We know we've lost 250,000 people and, you know, several million are infected.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the healthcare industry has gotten better at taking care of us if we do need hospitalization, but still, because there are so many more cases going up, the number of deaths hasn't declined yet. And we know that there's a vaccine coming up that could provide us with some kind of coverage, and it's the only thing that's come yet. Now, I've waited a year, or not a year, but almost a year for something. And, you know, I've obeyed all the rules. And in my trauma, I have been very careful about wearing masks, keeping social distancing, not attending functions, and so on and so forth. And as a result, I've been isolating.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I am going to take the vaccination once it's approved and available. Because if I get sick without the vaccine, and that's likely in my category, at some point, you know, I'll be sick. If I take the vaccine and I still get, you know, a hint, a touch of COVID because of the vaccine, I'll get the vaccine. I might as well take the vaccine. I mean, it's just like wearing a mask. It's not a panacea. It doesn't totally protect you, but it protects a great deal more of you percentage-wise than not wearing a mask, you know. So I want to live in a space where I reduce my trauma as much as possible, and I feel like taking the vaccine, you know, in the early part of next year is going to be part of that, because I want
right.
to live. Now, I'm still not going to be silly about going out in public and so forth. You know, I'm not. But I would rather have the likelihood, I think it will be. They won't release it if it's poisonous, for goodness sake. So, you know, that's how I feel. I mean, trauma victims are trauma victims. We get traumatized by all kinds of things. And this
yeah.
year, we've been added with this whole big extra menu of various things that have caused us more and more trauma. So I want to, you know, I want to be sensible about it, certainly, because to not be sensible is more traumatizing. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has to make their own decisions. I mean, I'll probably take it. I'll probably stick my arm out and say, do it. Get it over with, you know. And because I certainly don't want to die yet either, okay? I absolutely do not. And but on the other hand, what I was starting to say as I finally, you know, you came on, people, I'm getting phone calls, you know, at the AM. Well, I do that anyway, but they're really, really triggered now with their PTSDs. And those that suffer from fear you know, fear of this, fear of that, fear of that. It could be an obsession, you know, all kinds of things. But
this is the healthy
fear. It's magnified.
Fear.
Yeah, it's not. It's magnified.
Fear. It's a healthy fear to be afraid of COVID-19.
Yeah.
That's healthy. Because if you don't fear it and you're silly, you're going to get sick. And that's happening all over the world. How could you say anything but that?
Mm-hmm.
I can't see how anybody could say anything but that.
Right.
So,
no, but that's not what I'm saying, though, Bill. What I'm saying is they're already filled with fear of going through their healing journey. So with the COVID, this is what I was getting to. With the COVID,
it's
magnified. They're triggered far more.
It's not the same thing. Some fears are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you step off the curb and you hear a horn honk at you and you turn around and there's a car that just missed you, you know, because you backed up a half a step when you heard the horn, that was a healthy fear. That's what we're in.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you have feelings about it? Sure. But, you know, we're here, you know, to protect ourselves as much as possible. And the other stuff, we have so much other stuff. We should be experts at handling fear, frankly. We are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
And I don't give in to any fears. I minimize them by taking whatever appropriate steps I can towards the solution, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lori doesn't do that, right, Lori?
That's right.
I like to banter back and forth with him. You can do that too. Go ahead. I'm funny. I'm sorry.
I'm with you, Bill.
Go ahead.
I try to minimize the risks where I can. You know, I'm not a paranoid person. I'm just not. But it's almost to my detriment because. Some people throughout my life have been like, well, gee, aren't you this or aren't you afraid of that? And I'm like, no, not really, because I've already been through hell. I'm like, you know, there's not much left that can shock me, really. But the thing is it's
mm-hmm.
almost to my detriment because I'm kind of like, nah, I'm not paranoid about it, like whatever, you know, and I tend to do that with my whole life. And so I'm trying to recognize warning signs, pay attention to the signs, and, you know, do the right things that are necessary, you know, to keep myself safe. And, you know, a little bit of fear can be helpful. Fear is actually a tool, if you think of it that way. Some fear is healthy, like you were saying. So I'm with you on that, Bill, and I know, you know, it is something to fear. It's a real problem. And, you know, so many people are not taking it very serious. And it's like, well, you know, that's their own deal. They're going to have to pay the consequences. But I'm staying in, and I'm, you know, as much as I'd like to be out getting some fresh air, and I'm just staying away from everybody, and I'm just totally isolating, unless I absolutely have to go out. Like, I make no non-essential trips out, period. And I went to a new doctor yesterday and because I needed a new doctor in a bad way. And this doctor was awesome. And he was like, I said, you know, like, I'm not working right now. He said, well, it's a good thing, because if you get that COVID-19, you won't make it. And I'm like, really? He said, no, you won't. You've got COPD. You've got all these issues. You probably wouldn't survive it. He's like, you need to be at home, you need to stay home, and you need to just isolate. So that's what that's what I've been doing. So, you know, I think in that we have to find ways to, like, for instance, doing these blog talk shows. If anybody wants to call in, please do. Join our panel. We'd love to have you. And, you know, and there's other things, too, besides this that NASCA does. There's the Zoom group meetings that people can join.
I went to that today.
That's cool.
I went to the Zoom meeting today. It was good. You know, and there's an example of a way we accommodated, you know, something. We had a meeting going on. It only lasted for 4 or 5 weeks because then COVID came up. But it was in an in-person meeting at the Florida home where I'm still at temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat around in a circle in the, you know, in the Florida room, in the living room. And then when COVID came, we switched it over to a Zoom meeting, and it's been great ever since. 3 days a week now, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays at 2 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, I went in and attended today. It, you know, it's just right for me. And a lot of people are very grateful that we have that. So, you know, that's another thing people can do. You know, that's a, that was a substitute for an in-person meeting. But it turns out we had some, let's see, somebody from, I think it was Sri Lanka, Israel, and London, in addition to a bunch of people from all over this country and possibly somebody from Australia or New Zealand. I'm not sure. But the point is, you know, all you got to be is awake at the right time. Same thing with this show. It's so easy. You dial 646-595-2118. Hint, hint, hint. 646-595-2118. And we bring you on the show. And you take part in the discussion. And we need people to do this. You know, but it's that is a risk-free opportunity to participate in your own recovery. You know, risk-free.
Yep.
Because we do it from the comfort of our own home over the phone.
That's
the internet, or both.
And it really helps in the loneliness factor, you know, when you can, I mean, it's not the same as being in person with somebody or a group, but it's the next best thing. And to be able to hear someone else's voice and have a conversation and laugh a little bit and talk about what you wanted to talk about and, you know, be heard. It's a great thing.
It is a great thing. You know what's wrong too. And we had someone on last week, I guess it was, who was talking about you know, positive feelings. Remember the positive days, the positive things that made you happy, or start a new hobby. I mean, people are actually inside their homes. I'm not like that. Okay, I do go out, but I'm careful as I can be. But I don't go out as much, but I'm still going out. And so the point is that those who really do isolate themselves, I was speaking to someone yesterday that has been in since March.
Mm-hmm.
And the person has, you know, pre-existing conditions, and she has caregivers that come in. And in a case like that, she's worried about the caregivers that were walking around with no masks on and this and all this other stuff. And she has pre-existing conditions, okay? So
yeah.
It's very hard, you know, she was just furious, and I don't blame her because you think you're doing the right thing by, you know, staying in the house, and then you have help that's coming in who's not obeying the rules. They're not going by the rules, okay, and that's not good. If you're going to work with people and you're going to go into people's homes and with this terrible COVID out here, you have to wear your gloves. You have to wear your mask. I don't like wearing the mask. I wear it. I mean, it's itchy. It drives me nuts. It makes me sneeze inside my mask, for God's sake. It's a pain in the neck. But at least I know I'm not spreading germs, okay? I'm not spreading germs.
Nobody comes in my house without a mask. They're not allowed. You know, I've had a lot of people come through here in the last couple of months, especially 3 months, who were looking at the house because they were interested in buying it. So brokers and salespeople and potential buyers, all kinds of people, dozens of them, they don't get through the front door unless they wear a mask. And that's a rule I have here. The broker knows it, so he makes people have a mask on before they walk through the house. You know,
right.
That's the way it is. Sorry, I'm willing to open the door and let them through and be, you know, and get out of their way, but they have to do that for me. You know, because I'm also in an at-risk, you know, category, having recent surgery and other things. You know, I am not willing to help my landlord by hurting myself.
No.
So
definitely not.
No.
By the way, I'm not so sure that outfit matches there, Lori.
Get out of here.
No one ever said I had good taste. Okay.
Are you two looking at each other?
No. You're here with Carol. Yeah, hey, Laura, you're here with Carol, aren't you? That shows good taste.
There you go. That's cute. That's because he's making up for something. Okay. I forgive you. Oh, my God. But, no, seriously, Bill, this night owl thing with me, I get so many calls. I really do. And most of it is because of fear and people and depression. Oh, my God, are people depressed? And who wouldn't be? I understand. You see, a part of me thinks to myself, well, I'm a clown. We all know this. I love to laugh. I like to tease, all this other stuff. When you really get to know me, that's how I am. But, you know, it's this isn't funny. Mm-mm. You can't turn it funny. You can't make it funny, okay? So those people out there who haven't even started on their healing journey yet, and they're already filled with all kinds of fears from PTSD, whatever the situation might be, and then you have this on top of it all, they don't know what to do. I received a phone call a couple nights ago now from a girl. It was around 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, they seem to like 5 o'clock with me anyway. All right, whatever. She called, and I wasn't even sure how old she was, okay? And I think I spoke to you about that. Yes, I did, Bill. And she hasn't called back. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. I think she was, much younger. That's what I believe. And I figured it out. But she's so filled with depression and fear because of what we're living in this world. This is not the way it's supposed to be. You know, this is terrible. I have to admit. Mm-hmm. You know. Now I have my grandchildren who are getting tested for the COVID. Okay. And certain age groups they don't listen too well. They don't listen too well. And and even my great-grandchildren, because I have three. Oh, my God. No, I actually have four now. Oh, my God. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm losing track. These kids, they better find something better to do. That's all I can tell you. But anyway, the point is, they're making me old, Lori. So anyway. Yeah. Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, seriously, the ones that are in their 30s and their 40s, a lot of them don't listen. And it's because they can't see it. And also to the mindset. Nothing can hurt me. I'm still young. I'm 30 years old, you know, mm-hmm. or I'm 28 years old or whatever the number is, the magic number. And I always tease back. I say, well, they'll take one look at me and they'll get scared to hell and they'll run away, those germs. You know, this is how I tease them. But I don't really actually mean that because – you know, I'm not a spring chicken. We all know this. And I do have some pre-existing conditions, and I have to be more careful. So when I go out to the stores, I certainly wear my mask. And I said the other night when I was running the show with the Angels, I do believe in masks because people do sneeze. They do cough. That only makes common sense to me, okay? And, I certainly have an antiseptic type of solution in my car. The minute I get into the car, I immediately do my hands. And, I do the best that I can. I do whatever you can do to keep ourselves safe. And I do social distance.
Can I just ask you guys, Sharon Higgins Jones is supposed to be here tonight, right?
Yes, she was.
Sharon?
And I had Lori call her.
No, it's Melody. Melody J. Anderson.
Melody J. Anderson. Wait a minute, what'd you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, Melody
Anderson. Did you call her? Did you remind
her? Yeah, and then I tried again, and there was no answer. So I hope she's all right.
Yeah, see?
But I'm asking Carol, did you try to remind her?
I had Lori call her because I'm running the show.
No, I'm talking about reminding her on over the weekend. I give you five numbers.
Oh, no. I take care of that stuff. People know, Bill, because I email them. Or sometimes I call them, but every name
Melody.
You give me.
Melody, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Melody
okay.
J. Anderson, that's who was scheduled for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, I just have
I
the one number
right.
on her. I'll text her, too. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right,
I'm
sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to send this to the right person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no,
okay.
You wouldn't want to send it to the wrong one. No, that's okay.
Right.
And I did send you from Child Help also, because she has a new bio. I did that right before the show. You'll see. But
okay.
Anyway.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But anyway, the problem here is there seems to be no real end in sight, you know. At one point they were saying with the COVID, oh, it's going to calm down, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. And, you know, I'm not going to mention names, but the experts and all that stuff. But it's just not happening the way that they, you know, said. So because of this, people just don't know what to do. Now, Christmas is coming. You should see the
mm-hmm.
house across the street. People should pay to look at it. Okay? it's like if I get depressed or something, or I'm feeling whatever, I'll go look at that. I love Christmas decorations, Lori. I love them. I love to look at them. They're so pretty. And so I'll just open my curtains and just look and say, ah, yes, you know, that I do like. Yes, that'll make me happy. So I think that what people are starting to do, one of the phone calls I had received last night, never, ever give out names, but that person, well, two people now I've heard that do this, they've gone to art. And even though if it's just numbers, you know, like those numbered painting things you can buy as a hobby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, paint by numbers,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And, well, you know, my mother did that. I mean, think about how when I was a kid,
this has been around
for many years. It's been around for many years, and she did one.
Did they have
well.
A lot of numbers back then?
I'll be quiet. I'm gonna bite him. I'm gonna bite you. And so anyway,
her set, Lori, her set was paint by Roman numerals.
Oh, I'm going to get even with that one. Oh, that was good.
Sorry.
That was
that
rich. That was rich. Oh,
oh
you're in for it, buddy. Oh, yeah. But anyway, that was funny. But anyway, the point is, it was she had done such a good job on it, and the colors were so good that, you know, she put a frame around it and hung it in the
mm-hmm.
house. You know, and because she had done such a good job on it. A lot of people are
right,
doing
somebody,
that.
Somebody make a note. I just heard back from Melody. I had told
mm-hmm.
Carol last week I'm unable to do the show anymore because I have clients then. Somebody make a note for me that we have to replace
no.
her because I don't want to forget. We also need to have somebody for the slot that Felicia's in because this last meeting was the last one of her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
I didn't receive
Please.
That email. All right, okay, whatever, because
what
I would have called you immediately. All right, I don't know what happened.
And there's somebody
yeah,
calling you
that.
Now. I don't know who that is.
That's,
okay.
That's Pamela.
It.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, is that Pamela? Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Pamela, hi,
Pamela.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Well,
I'm good.
I'm glad you called in. I'm glad you called in. I know that we noticed that you had called in a little bit earlier. Then you're calling in now for real. So that's good. Yeah, our guest couldn't make it tonight, and I didn't know she couldn't make it. I didn't get that email. I don't know. Maybe some junk got over it, and I didn't see it. That can happen. But anyway, we're all here.
Yeah.
Pam, is there anything you want to talk about?
Well, was that Bill I was hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stop, Bill.
I'm stopping.
He's giving everybody a hard time.
<Isn't
he really?
laughs>
Yeah.
Ooh, yoy,
yoy.
Well, yes, me. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
What do y'all want to talk about? What are we talking about? Or do y'all need a subject?
We could use a subject
trauma.
If you have one.
Well, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could use one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really getting tired of these CPS people taking these children away. This is really getting on my nerves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming out more. There just came an article out in the Chronicle, the Houston Chronicle, and these doctors, some of these pediatricians are, you know, making allegations against the parents that they've abused them, and then they find later on that it was, you know, maybe it was a strap from the, you know, belt that was around the baby's waist when they were carrying it, or, you know, they're just making these instantaneous, impulsive diagnoses, and then later, you know, then checking the facts out later. And then you've got, you know, these parents that are across the nation having their children taken away for no reason. I don't understand it. I wish we could.
The whole thing is crazy. It's all corrupt. Like, it's so corrupt. There's a whole bunch of children who need to be removed from their homes because they're being abused, and they're not being removed, and they're dying and ending up in the morgues. And then there's a whole bunch of children being removed who don't need to be removed. And the whole thing is completely corrupt. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's what I got to
say. They say one of the reasons they don't take the children is they don't have the money to take the children. But then they take other children, and, you know, I don't know where they get the money from. I know the states don't have money, most of them, to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
you know,
anyway.
I'll tell you what, Pamela, there's there are people, don't take this wrong, people out there. You know, I tell it like it is. There are people out there that take in foster care, and they're approved, you know, to be foster parents. They may even take a couple of courses, you know, to learn how to be foster parents, all this other stuff. And either they're good or they're bad, okay? This is just the way it is. Now, I'm not going to mention what facility it was I was working at, but there was one person who was a foster parent, and that person got turned in, okay? Because the kids, that I think there were five or six little girls, I don't remember if it was five or six, one of the two numbers, were up in his attic. They were not allowed to be a part of the family. Okay.
Wow.
And so I guess, I mean, they had heat up there. He made sure of that. And they were fed. That's nice, right? Oh, oh boy. And, you know, they had their clothing. And one thing with foster care, I've mentioned this many times before, and I'm going to mention again because it's so, so, so needed. I understand everyone has schedules. We have schedules, okay? And what happens is that, you know, it's hard sometimes to meet those schedules on the exact date. I understand this. But with foster care, they have to find some way to not even tell the people exactly, maybe give them a three-day buffer period there or whatever. I'm going to come possibly on Tuesday, the 27th, and but then show up maybe the 26th. Because that way, you'll get a real, you know, eyes view, okay, bird's eye view of what's going on inside of that dwelling. Because many times, you know, children are told what to say, what not to say. I had a friend that was in foster care. I know these things. What to say, what not to say. And how to look, how not to look. And keep your eyes down because you don't want to look at her in the face. She might see you about ready to lie if she asks you a question. All right? All kinds of stuff these kids have to go through. And, I mean, things have to change. You know, they maybe better do – they have to change because children are being murdered. Children are being neglected. And that person I was speaking about before – got fined heavily, and maybe even did a little bit of jail time. Okay, I'd be glad to hear that. Okay, so those were five or six little girls. Now the only way that they found out what was going on in that house is one of those little girls told in school. She told a teacher in school that, you know, how they were living, and that's how that happened. Teacher made a phone call.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, headway being made, when Aaron Murphy, I don't know if it's not Aaron, what's the name? Aaron Marin, that was the name.
Marin.
Oh, yeah.
Marin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was holding these schools accountable to teach children from age K through 12 every year about safe and unsafe touching. And I'm sure abuse goes along with that, you know, like physical injury if somebody's doing physical harm to you, you know, or if you're not able to get food or something. It was an outlet for the kids to understand that it was okay to tell, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but, you know, with COVID, everything slowed down now. So we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on.
Well, now those kids are in trouble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're really in trouble now. You know, Pamela,
mm-hmm.
my God.
Wasn't that part of last night's show? Pamela, were you there for last night's show?
Yes, with Jessica Morgan.
Right. She talked about, we call it institutional abuse and enabling here at NASCA, and it covers a lot of bases. But certainly CPS and foster care and family courts and some parts of law enforcement and those kinds of things are all involved. Medical facilities sometimes. There's medical abuse that goes on, believe it or not. All these
mm-hmm.
things have the possibility, because they're big institutions, of becoming kind of broken to the point that they're abusive themselves. So we call it institutional abuse and enabling. It covers a lot of bases.
Mm-hmm.
And these systems are, by and large, well, it depends on where you live, to be perfectly honest, and I always try to be. It depends on where you live. Because how you're treated is contingent on wherever you're, how your local system operates. And there are some that are quite good, but there are an awful lot of them that are horrible, and some that have like no social conscience at all for the institution. So there is a lot of abuse going on in all those things that I named just now and others that. Are damaging children, and that's the point of NASCA, you know, is to try and protect kids to the point where they're not damaged to begin with, and then if they are, and they grow up, and they're damaged adults, because they were damaged in childhood, to help them. But institutional abuse and enabling is a big deal. We used to do a show on it every month,
mm-hmm.
and the lady that led that show. Got too busy to continue, but we did it for a couple of years, more than that, maybe 3-4 years. And her name was Jill Jones Soderman. So if you're interested in looking those shows up, anybody who's here tonight, you go to NASCA.org/Jill, J-I-L-L, and all the shows that she did with me are in one place, on one page, going back. And there's a description of the kind of abuse that's discussed during each of those episodes. So there's a lot of information at NASCA. Now, we had to give that up because Jill, who was the professional, had to give it up. But it is a topic, as you can see from last night, that we're not afraid to tackle. And we're not afraid to bring someone on who is in the middle of a family court fight or was a witness to domestic abuse when they were young and now experienced it themselves as they were older, you know, all kinds of things. So institutional abuse and enabling is another area that we should be aware of, all of us, as child abuse survivors.
You know, Bill, those shows that you're talking about, you know, like Community Matters, that was one, and, you know, or even LACPD. All right, listen, there were good and bad in it, but the good part is that it's today, it's happening, and we don't speak a lot about community anymore, you know. And I think things are so out of hand because the system itself, of course, is way out of hand, too. And between society doesn't seem to have any conscience either, you know what I'm saying? So they see something and they look the other way. And what I'm trying so hard to get across to people that we speak to is don't look the other way. You know, this affects you too. And if they'll say why, they've actually said to me, how could this affect me if some kid is walking down the street, he's delinquent and he's going to go to juvie or whatever. You have to understand that your house might be the next one to get broken into. There's a lot of B&Es, say they're on drugs. I mean, there's just so many things that we covered with community, you know, Community Matters, that people are not thinking about. And then also, too, those who have to go to other kinds of institutions, like you mentioned, an institution, whether they go to juvie or whether they have to go to inpatient, like Devereaux, where I used to work years ago. Because who pays for that? Society pays for that, just a little bit out of their paycheck, not much, just a little bit. But everybody pays for it. And we pay for it one way or another. We just simply do.
Actually, we spend a lot of money on these things, and it's not a lack of money. It's more a matter of money being spent in the wrong way in the wrong places, because there's plenty of money in the system if we did it different. Now, the thing is that you say that people find it hard to believe. They don't want to believe it. It's denial, and they don't want to believe it. They don't want to believe child abuse itself. You know, it's a terrible topic to talk about. And they certainly don't want to believe in the institutional abuses that we're talking about. It's a terrible, the very system that's supposed to be most helpful to children, you know, often, not always, but often, depending on where you live, is abusive. Mm-hmm. And it raises our children not to help them, but to sort of self-sustain the institution itself. That's one of the biggest problems. You know, that they are really there because they're like a machine, that they have to keep a certain number of people coming through the system in order to pay for the machine. Comes out of government, of course. That's where the money comes from. It's all of us, like you say, Carol.
It is. It absolutely is. And, you know, until society wakes up and realizes, you know, that, okay, it may not be in their family, but it doesn't mean that it's not in your neighbor next door. And down the street a ways is a bunch of kids that are right on that line that I speak about, you know, of being good. And then, you know, they're doing bad things. They go over the line. And then they start doing B&Es. They get into drugs. They get into alcohol. They get into all the things that you and I used to be in, all these things. And it's because of the breakdown of society and the breakdown of the family structure itself, okay? This is where it starts, the family structure itself, okay? And now we can't do everything. But
Somebody's trying to make a comment.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that society and the family, like you're saying, is broken down so severely. It's just like, where do we start? You know, I mean, you know, a lot of people cohabitate. They don't even get married. And that's one of the reasons, you know, they don't even care about marriage. So how could they care about their, their kids, you know? And then you've got people, you say you want people to pay attention. A lot of people are scared to pay attention to the guy next door. They don't know if he's crazy and going to shoot him up or what, you know. People just aren't trusting of each other anymore in this society because people just assume shoot you than look at you. You know?
Crazy. I hear you. And that's so true. Like in the days when Bill and I were growing up.
The radio show that Carol was referring to called Community Matters was done it was done under the other nonprofit that I had started and still exists. It's not a nonprofit, it's just a grassroots thing, called Los Angeles Community Policing. So Community Matters was a community policing show. It wasn't about child abuse. It was about public safety, certainly.
Exactly.
And the whole idea was to bring community and government and law enforcement and all the other systems together to try and get them to talk to each other and figure out some solutions. It worked very well for me in the late 90s and through the first decade of the 21st century. And then I started coming to Florida and I started NASCA. I may go back to it when I get back to California because right now there's a huge spike in homicides again. And I know this is part of the solution, but you have to act. You ask what you can do. You have to actively go out and challenge people to stop fighting and start talking, to be in discussion, not in agreement, but in discussion, to actually hear each other's issues and to share them back and forth and look for solutions that, you know, are probably negotiated. That's the way it works. But negotiated in good faith between whatever parties are involved. That's community policing. It's not law enforcement. It's policing with a small p. You know, in other words, all government in a sense is policing. And so getting community policing, a community policing program started is really the neighbors in the areas, the residents of the area, having the ability to voice their concerns, and government and law enforcement and whatever, you know, willing to listen. And then the other way around, too, because, frankly, the community does learn, if they're willing to listen, that there are concerns that we have to figure out how to address from the perspective of government and law enforcement and so forth. Now, each party can learn, but only if we can bring them together and have them actually have, and it's not just a one-time thing, over and over again, open dialogues where there's transparency and sharing of information. That's how you do it. I may go back to doing that when I'm in Los Angeles again, because I'm known in Los Angeles for having done this for 25 years, but not in the last 10. And if so, I may end up doing more of those shows.
Right.
Well, that's what I believe in now, Bill. See, that's why I go out and work on the streets, because that's with the homeless. But while you're working with the homeless, you also work with the community, okay? See, that's where I think a lot
homeless
of it.
Part of
yeah.
It.
Yeah. I think that's where a lot of the answer lies, you know, in our in our neighborhoods, you know, that the urban, I'm speaking more of urban neighborhoods, because without the people, you know, being able to converse back and forth, it's okay not to agree, okay? But people have to learn to agree in a way that isn't going to become volatile too, okay? But you can find solutions many times. If all the voices go, you have town hall meetings, you can have that. Community meetings, as they're called. We had that for a while in Peaburg. It didn't last long. I don't know what happened. But anyway, the point is the townspeople could come and raise issues, okay, and then learn from each other. But today people have to want to learn from each other, okay? But if the inside structure of the family, and this I learned in sociology from, what's her name, Professor Dixon. If people do not learn, you know, about the inside of their home and the behaviors and the structure of their family, all right, and then they're not willing to look at the structure of their family, they're too sick themselves because from whatever they came from, then the cycle just continues. It continues. And Pamela, when you had mentioned that a lot of times people right next door know that there's a problem and they're scared they're going to get, you know, knifed, you know, they're stabbed. I had stabbings right by me in Peaburg, for God's sake. And shootouts, absolutely. That problem does exist. But it's still a breakdown of society and also the place in which you live. You see, they have to have more community things like Bill was speaking about. And when we had the Guardian Angels on the other night, Bill, think, okay, the Guardian Angel, the cops, the police officers, the Guardian Angels, and Neighborhood Watch Block, I think they put Block on there, I don't know. But the three work together. Now, there's a little city right there, okay, it's not the biggest of cities, not like the city that I know of, New York, but it's a city, and they don't have any of the terror going on that we watch on TV. They don't have that.
Well, L.A. does, and L.A. does because it's a different kind of place. It has a gang system that it's never been able to defeat. For decades and decades, the gangs are the biggest problem. They're actually shooting at each other, but unfortunately, bullets, you know, don't always go into the person they're intended for. You know, they go all around.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge problem. Now, I don't want to get too hung up in this because this is a show about child abuse. But I will tell you, there are answers to all those things that you mentioned, including being afraid to give tips on the neighbor. Here's the thing: you ask what you can do, get to know your own block first, your own neighbors first. Don't don't try to fix the whole problem, you know, on the outside until you at least have a safe place for you. I mean, every time you befriend, you know, someone who lives three doors down, your block is better off for it. And there's just an unfortunate thing that we are avoiding each other. Now, COVID makes that more complicated, too. But
that's right.
It's not so complicated that it can't be done. There are answers. Lori, I don't want to leave you out if you haven't spoken in a while, if you have some thoughts. But I want to, I also want to get back to child abuse at some point.
Yeah. I was just listening and hearing, you know, what you guys are talking about there. Because, you know, I live in a big city, too. It's not like New York City, but it's a big city. And we have our share of problems here, too. And there is, you know, there doesn't seem to be much community going on. And we all live in these little communities. They are separate little communities. It's, you know, I live downtown, so I'm right downtown. But there's, I'm sure there's, you know, there's some neighborhoods that have neighborhood links, you know, where people come together and stuff. But I don't live out there amongst those people, so I don't know. I haven't done a lot of research into it. You know, we're just, Canada, you know, is a little different than the States. We don't have the population, first of all, that the States has. The population is all centered around the border, and so the bigger cities are centered mainly towards on the border of the States. And it's a very small population. It's easier to control a small population. You know what I mean? We don't have a lot of the same problems that the States is having. But we still have a lot of crime, and we got to, you know, we've got our share of crime and troubles and abuse and child abuse going on. And there doesn't seem to be any talk about it, that's for sure. I've tried to get involved locally here with groups representing other not-for-profits to be a public speaker, child abuse prevention public speaker, and also for survivors. And there was no interest whatsoever to have me join the groups. You know, they were just like, no, you know. I just kind of got shut out. Yeah, I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
Lori, bringing up that subject, what comes to mind is CPS and them, they're all so hush-hush. You know, it's like nobody gets to know what's going on, you know. And that's the worst thing because then they can do anything they want to anybody. You see what I'm saying? And they do. They single these families out and they treat them any way they want to. And it goes on within this little hush-hush, you know, society, and it shouldn't be that way. It's a public, everybody should know who's abusing who, you know.
Yeah, in Canada it's even more quiet, it's even more silenced than in the States. In the States, you know, quite often we'll see the headlines out there and we know who's, you know, who's involved in the case. But the up here they keep it very hush-hush. It's the States, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, but the Canada is about, what did they say, 20 years or something like that behind the States all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe 50 years or something like that. So we're behind the States. There's always the States will be doing something more proactive than Canada for sure. So things are still pretty much under the carpet here. Nobody cares. And it's like, whatever, child abuse doesn't exist. But we know that it does. And but nobody wants to acknowledge it.
That's bad.
Because try to keep it on the down low. You know, they're like, you know, this is what we're going to do, and nobody needs to know but who we're doing it to. And that's what keeps, you know, women, you know, or getting their children taken away by these powerful men that have money that have deserted them, you know, and taking their children to punish them. You know, and it's just, and I'm not saying it's just women, you know, women. It happens to men too.
Yeah.
But mostly women, and the women are just extremely punished on losing their children, you know, for no reason. It's because the man wants to punish them.
Yeah, this is happening. There was a show not too long ago that I was on the panel, and we were talking about that. This was last week sometime. And they were we were talking about that very issue. And I told him, I said, you know, I actually know of a man, a gentleman, who he's my friend, and he lost his children in a divorce custody battle. And he he loves his children, and he's and the wife is the one who, the ex-wife, won all custody rights, and she's the one that's abusing those children. And it can go both ways. It's not always the man.
Yeah.
It's not always the woman. Right. You know, my mom was my main abuser, so there you go. People think, you know, that mothers are all loving and everything. Like, not every mother, right?
That's right.
It's like, you know, it goes both ways. And I feel bad for this person that I know, because he loves his children, and, you know, he's the court sided with her. That's all there is to it. He doesn't seem to have, there's just no headway for him, and his children are being brainwashed to stay away from him. But I said, you know, when they get older, maybe they'll want to know you. The thing is the sad thing, I was talking about that just to make a point, the children end up paying the price for that. So
that's
in those
right.
nasty divorce, you know, custody battles, it's always the children that pay the price, because the adults.
And society. That's the point. I think that's the only way you can reach, sort of, when we talk about community in general, you can only talk about it if it affects them. So you have to say, this is a societal problem, which does affect
it
us,
is.
Every one of us.
It is.
And, you know that is a possible way to reach a community member. Now, here's the other thing. A lot of us are too busy trying to fix the world to recognize that the block we live on is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
every block is, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Lori, I know you don't live, you know, in the suburb part, but you live in an apartment building, you know, so that building has trouble. There are,
oh, for sure.
That might be where you focus your work, you know, on the building first, you know, or the complex or whatever, you know. But the point is that everybody's suffering from this, even if it's hidden from them and they don't realize it. So we have to open their eyes and tell them, you know, it's not just the child that's being damaged. That child is going to grow up and become a teenager, a young adult, and so on. And many of them, perhaps, you know, 20% maybe, but it's a big number, are going to damage society. They're going to turn around and do the same thing. Or they're going
to do, what they do.
Petty crimes, or they're going to, you know, whatever it is. This is where we can, and it's a long-term fight, believe me, I get it. But, you know, you can't fix the world, but you can fix, you know, your own block, your own neighborhood. I recommend, for example, seeking out folks who are single mothers. We have a big problem with fathers abandon their children. And the mothers are, I don't know if to say stuck with them, but they're more responsible for the child, according to society, than the father will. And it's very tough to raise a bunch of kids if you don't have a second adult around. And, you know, so seek those people out and offer them some little assistance, or maybe the elderly person that lives alone, or whatever it is. Anything you can do, the point is, anything you can do helps. So, you know, they're saying, you save one person, you save the world. It's true.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we have to approach it, one person at a time.
Well, I think I totally agree with that. And but I do believe in the groups working together, you know, in these cities. If all of them could work together, then the kids out on the street, they know that they're being watched, and they know they're going to have to answer to someone. And if you look inside of the homes, they're running away from their homes. They're running away from the people. That's what they're doing, who are abusing them. And you know what? I had someone say to me, I guess it was yesterday, well, all I have is domestic violence. That's all I know about. Well, let me tell you something. Domestic violence, which is the way that my abuses first started with domestic violence, was watching it. I didn't get hit, but I always thought I was going to. My brother did get hit, and my mother, of course, was the main player, where she was constantly hit, and that was disgusting. And they didn't know I was watching, my mother and my so-called father. But anyway, the point is that right there is trauma. That devastates a child. I was doing that from age 4 until finally at the age of 5, I started screaming because I knew that My mother was going to get really, 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 maybe even possibly killed. My brother told me what that meant. So this does terrible damage to a child. And I had read somewhere very recently that by watching domestic violence is almost like equivalent to a soldier who is suffering a PTSD, that the both are somewhat very similar, the way that it affects the person or the child, the people. So domestic violence is not something to be looked over. Many times that's where the problems start, is with domestic violence, and then it escalates, goes from one thing to another.
Right.
So, you know, and I don't know. We live in a very harsh world. That's all I can say. Oh, boy. See, there's all different ways children can be abused, and that's emotionally, or they can be neglected. You know, that's a lack of even proper, the basic things that they need, clothing, food, water. You know, physically abused, obviously, and then, of course, sexual. And when you try to, I know people right now who are working on websites because they want to speak about, you know, sexual abuse between a brother and sister, a sibling, whatever, a family member, and they're so afraid of it. They're afraid to, you know, the people are afraid to even say the word, my incest, oh, my God, you know, incest. And yet that's a huge part of many of the homes and the problems, that things that are going on inside of the homes. I have friends that were, you know, were abused at home. I was abused at home by my older sibling. And, you know, on and on it goes. So, again, I always say, don't say that the kid is a brat or who's the kid's no good. Go to the family, see from where he came or she came, okay? And then you can have better judgment. And that's what needs to be worked on, you know. That's the way I see it. And it is a huge problem and a huge ordeal to try and do that. But that's what we need people to do.
Yeah, my daughter's going through this right now. She was with her live-in boyfriend for a year and a half. He tried to choke her 3 times. She didn't think anything about the first 2 because they were both inebriated. But the 3rd time, he hadn't been drinking and neither had she, and he just went off on her, and she said, I'm calling the police. He didn't believe it. So she called the police, and he was like, she deserved it. Can you believe that? The cops are looking at him. And he's already on probation for marijuana. So, you know, he's probably going to get his probation revoked. But behind it all, she was telling me that his older brother, infested him, abused him. And he hasn't even told his mother. He's 26 years old, I think. He has never told his mother. And Lindsay just told her, said, you might want to check with your son because he has issues that he needs help. She's like, what issues? She said, well, I can't tell, you know, only he can tell you that. But I'm wondering if the brother has threatened him, you know what I'm saying? If you tell, blah, 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 you know.
Because
he can't tell anybody, but he opened up to my daughter because he felt safe with her. But, you know, he still has so many issues, so she had to part from him.
I think Lori was trying to say something. Lori, was that you?
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Lori.
No.
I heard a sigh. I didn't know where it came from. Yeah, I did. I heard a sigh. Maybe there's an angel around me somewhere. I don't know. I heard a sigh. oh, my God, there they go again. But, you know, it's true what you say. What happens inside of that family, you have the bullies inside of the family, like with the gangs, okay? You have there are many. It's generational many times, even with the gangs. And what happens is that a child growing up in an environment like that, where they see all of these things, all this sexual abuse and the way they treat the women and what the men do, they're ordered to go out and take care of rivals, and of course that usually means murder them. and all this other stuff. And then they reach a certain age, the boys reach a certain age, where they're supposed to behave like a man, and they're supposed to go out, and they're supposed to do things too. What kind of a life is that child going to have? What is he going to turn into? He's going to turn into what he came from, you see?
Right.
And that's where the cycle needs to be broken in the gangs. I understand gang history, okay? I understand it too well. So what happens is, you know, like a sociopath, they found out in the gangs, because they're usually sociopaths many times, they can actually have their own little family and have feelings and have remorse if someone dies, or then too they can go out and get girlfriends, or they can get married, and all the things that we consider to be normal, but they'll go out and shoot someone or go out and stab someone because they got an order. And they feel no remorse. Now, that's the sociopath. The psychopath, on the other hand, that's really scary. The psychopath is a person will become, what's that?
They enjoy it.
There is a difference, and I can explain that. The psychopath can actually go out and be charming, have a very, very good job, look like, like any other person in the neighborhood. They don't have horns, even though they should have horns, I'm just saying, and all this other stuff, and have a family of his or her own. Remember, it can be women, too, okay, of their own. But then at nighttime, I'll use that as an example, when the moon is up in the sky and people are sleeping or whatever, he or she will go out and they'll look for their prey. They'll look for their prey and have absolutely and utterly no remorse, none, zip, zilch, okay? And yet they don't know how to love. And what happens, though, Bill, what I'm trying to explain to you is cycles.
Well, you're explaining the problem. I'd rather talk about the solution because there are solutions. We all know about
the problem. Okay, what do you think the solution is? Go ahead.
That's all. What the solution is, in both the cases of criminal activity and child abuse activity, that it has to be reported, and we have to encourage people to do this, because the damaged child grows up to be the troubled teenager, grows up to be the criminal adult.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works. But there are systems in place where it can be reported, and it's really important. We call this intervention, right? Where we become more aware of our surroundings and our neighbors, as I said before, and we have to risk, frankly, giving a tip that might be wrong. But there are places to do it. In fact, Friday, Carol's going to be interviewing our friends from Child Help, and they actually recommend us. If you call them to give an anonymous tip and you mention that you're an abused adult, you were abused as a child, they might turn you on to us, because we're one of their resources for that.
Yep.
But they're also a huge clearinghouse for hooking up people with quality, services for children. They're called Child Help. They've been around since the 50s, the late 50s, and they're members of NASCA. In the law enforcement circles, there are ways to give a tip, even on gang members, but you have to be smart about it, and so does law enforcement. And I'm going to go back and tell them this again, that we have to be sensitive to the fear, the very real fear, that if somebody thinks you're a snitch, then you become a target. So they have to not find out. That has to be done anonymously, and it has to be done in such a way that the police officers do not divulge who gave that tip. And there are a variety of ways that can be done. So there are solutions, but it all begins with speaking up.
Bill, what do you think that my daughter possibly should have told him to go to the police about his brother?
If there's child molestation going on, it's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
If there's child molestation going on, there is no sex with a child that's not a crime. It's all a crime. So yes. And but you go with them with your suspicion. You don't do the investigating. They do the investigating. But it's up to us to do the reporting, because they can't be in every neighborhood and know all the situations. We can. We live there.
Right.
And if we don't speak up, see, I think, and I know Carol believes this too, and probably Lori and you, that we all should be what's called a mandated reporter, required to report. But we don't. We're not. There are certain categories of people who are mandated reporters, and even those people are not necessarily doing that job.
So should she go to the cops now? Should she go to the cops and tell them?
If she has a good suspicion that it's going on,
No, he told
her. She should give them.
It's not going on now. It happened in the past when they were kids.
Well, it depends on how long ago it was, because there's a statute of limitations on these things.
Right.
That depends on the jurisdiction, because some places have a very short amount of time that you can report it, and other times there's the statute runs out relatively quickly, and you lose your opportunity.
Some other kids right now. He might be abusing other kids right now.
Maybe.
I mean,
you can report a person's name and have them check up on it. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. You know, it kind of depends, again, on where you live and how sensitive the community is and the police are and Child Protective Services are and all this. It depends on your jurisdiction, and I can't tell you, because every one of them operates a little differently. Everyone.
Yeah. All right.
So this is another problem. When we talk about the solution, this is another solution. Another suggested solution, ultimately, would be to get us all on a similar page.
Absolutely.
But that takes a lot of doing. In the meantime, every individual can be a mandated reporter and report as best they can their suspicions, be accurate on what they tell a person that comes forward. Maybe you can look up the statute of limitations for that person and see if there's an opportunity for either criminal or civil action to be taken. There's two kinds of cases. If it's criminal, that has to be handled by the prosecution and the police. If it's civil, that you have to hire your own attorney for, and you bring the civil suit, not the state. So there's various pathways.
Mm-hmm. Right. But isn't it it needs to come out. Otherwise, it's going to fester and it's going to keep going and it's going to keep cycling. It's not always about being in jail. It's stopping them from being able to do this to anybody else.
I want to be upbeat about this, but I'll tell you what. You know that there are required reporting of people who have sex offenses, right? And there are maps of those. And if you go to one of those maps and you put your address in and you say, show me what sex offenders live in a 10-mile radius of where I live, you will be shocked, no matter who you are and where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you got to work on them all eventually. But, the only way you do it is report one person at a time. So, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me say something about that. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell my daughter that she needs. See, she kept feeling something was missing, and then talking to y'all about this. The key is, she needed to help that guy by telling him to go to the police, or, she's a nurse, she's a mandated reporter. As soon as he told her that, she should have acted.
That's right. That's right.
Well, so often when it's in the family like that, they don't. You have to understand that, Pamela, okay? So many times I've run into people and we start talking, and if I can get them on the subject, because I'm handing cards out many times, they'll talk and they'll say, well, it happened in my family, but I don't want to talk about it. You see, people are ashamed, too. There's fear. There's shame. You know, they're afraid of being, ostracized from the family, like thrown out. They look at it backwards. That person that or persons who are the people who are actually assaulting or the family members, for God's sake, they're the ones that should be stopped. Okay, they're the ones that need to be removed from the family. Because yes, I'm going to tell you something right now. The stats are not very good. Okay, they're not good at all. When you put a person in prison, and I even saw a show. I mentioned this once in a while with Oprah. Okay, she had pedophiles all lined up in front of her. This is one of her very last shows, and she was interviewing them on the stage there. And they had gotten help. These are people who had gotten help. They had done their time. And so they were free in, mm-hmm. in the sense of being in their own home. But
I
what happened was, oh, did you? Then you know what mm-hmm. I'm talking about. Not
yep.
one of those men, and they all raised, they were all different ages. I'd say, what, Lori, 36, maybe up to 70? Wasn't the one guy almost 70, I think? I don't know. His late 60s or 70. And not one of them could say that a child could be safe around them. Not
mm-hmm.
one.
That's right.
Yeah. So I bring that up. I'm glad that you heard it too. I bring that up every once in a while because you see, you cannot, evidently, I'm going to say evidently, you cannot heal a pedophile. They're different. You can't heal them. We don't know how to, we don't
know
what to do with them.
Somebody was saying, don't call them pedophiles because pedophile means lover of child. They're not lovers
mm-hmm.
of children. They don't love these children. They're molesters. They're predators. Call them
mm-hmm.
anything but pedophile. Call them what they are, predators.
Right.
Yeah,
they,
predators what I use.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're right.
Lover of children.
You know, here's another thought. You know, we talk about, again, I want to talk about solutions as much as possible. There are scenarios where you actually pay for tips,
mm-hmm.
and the tips are anonymous. Things like Crime
mm-hmm.
Stoppers, maybe some of you have heard of.
Yes, yes.
Where mm-hmm. where they you call in a tip, and you don't say who you are, but they do give you a registration number. And if they take action based on your tip, they get back to you through your registration number. They even pay you anonymously. And it just shows up in a place where you can go and withdraw the funds because you know the registration number. Now, I'm not saying we should do that with predators, but they do that with other kinds of crime, and it does work because that's an incentive that makes sense to people. And that's what we have to find. If you can't incentivize somebody to protect their own child or society, maybe you say, well, how about if we pay you? I don't know. But that's an example of it's a solution that works in the one arena. Maybe it would work in the other. I mean, I'm trying to be open-minded. It sounds silly, but what makes it silly is it sounds silly. It's not necessarily silly. It actually works in some arenas.
Right.
So let's try everything we can and think outside the box, as they say, to institute whatever we can. Those mandated reporters that don't do the reporting probably need to be punished. You know,
yes,
and that would
they
be
do.
At least at some level, the healthcare workers and the teachers and the law enforcement folk and, you know, there are various categories of people who are required because of the type of work or license they carry. It's true with therapists and so forth, that they are required to report child abuse as soon as they hear about it, as soon as they know about it.
Right.
And as somebody said before, it's not happening that way, and that's a shame. Because, again, that's the reason that they are mandated reporters, and I think we all should be, but these are mandated reporters is because they're the frontline people. But aren't we all?
Right.
Aren't we all the frontline
yeah.
people for the children of North America? That's
yeah,
what I
that's
feel.
The way we should be. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
Well, that's why I say when you go into stores, I mentioned this the other night, because we've all seen that, not just me, we've all seen this. Look, there's one way of telling your kid, no, you can't have this, in a decent way. But then you'll find those parents who are so volatile, and they'll just say, I said no, and bang, they get hit in the head or something, you know. And, you know, it goes on and on. I hate seeing that. I hate it. But what you can do is most stores have, you know, security officers. They do have them. And you, they don't even have to know you're watching them. Just go get a hold of a security officer, tell them what you saw, and let them take care of it. And then those upstairs, like in ShopRite, I've spoken to, you know, actually spoken to the people in ShopRite, in Peaburg, actually. And they had to take courses on, there's a couple of people upstairs by the cameras where they do their work up there, had to take courses on child abuse, and just a couple, and to watch out for the signs, like we speak about at times, the signs of child abuse, okay, and how the adult, you know, behaves with the child and so forth. And so if you can't find a security officer, you can always go up there. You can go up there. You can get someone to come down, and they will take over from there. So there are things that society can do in that case, okay? And you don't even have to give your name. You don't have to give your name. Just let people know, you know, that this is what you see, this is what's happening, and please help, okay?
Yeah.
So there's a solution for you, Bill. I just gave a solution.
Yeah, educating ourselves is part of that too, and educating the community around us. That whoever would be willing to get educated needs to be educated. We need to show up for them, and you can do this formally and informally. But you know, the first thing about the triad of what to do about child abuse is prevention, and that's education.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
right.
We usually think about prevention as being something we give to kids. But frankly, we need to teach prevention to uninformed adults, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it, as I say, formally through an organization like Darkness to Light, which will bring out and do presentations to small groups. But you can do it in your own neighborhood watch meeting. My recommendation, the Blue Ribbon Campaign was originally the Blue Ribbon Neighborhood Watch Campaign, where once once in a while, once every 6 months, we'd ask for 15 minutes to present the issue of child abuse, because I'd never heard it talked about it at a neighborhood watch meeting before, and pass out blue ribbons and cards and a little literature. That's anybody can do that. You don't have to be an expert.
Right.
You have to know what, you have to be accurate, but you know, and perhaps turn it over to the neighbors who come to the neighborhood watch. You know, resources are printed out and so forth, but you know, that's the first step, prevention. We should be teaching that to our children, too, but we need to teach it to each other. And then intervention is part of what you learn. Intervention is part of what you learn when you talk about prevention activities. And then intervention, and then finally recovery. Those are the three, that's the triad of things that has to eventually be done. And we you know, deal with them all here at NASCA, prevention, intervention, and then recovery.
Me and Mark were going to the library in our communities and setting up shop on the third floor and inviting the community up to the library to learn about, prevention of sexual assault. And, of course, child abuse goes along with that, too. And so we were, you know, doing that at our library. A lot of people don't show up, but I guess we keep trying, huh?
That's right.
You have to
keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tough to get people to show up for these things. I completely understand and concur. Carol, we're at the end here, but I want to thank I want to thank Lori and Pamela for having called in tonight, and thank you for running the show. So I'll get off the air. But thank you so much for all three of you.
Okay, well, thank you, Bill. Good night now. Well, you know what? We had a good show anyway. And there's always so much to talk about with child abuse and family structure, and that's where a lot of times the family, you know, the kids get abused. I like to bring that out as much as I can, and so forth and so on. So we never run out of things to talk about, okay? So anyway, thank you so much for being here, Pamela, and, of course, Lori. And I have to wrap the show up now. So have a good night. Stay safe. And say prayers. That's what I do. I don't know. Good night.
Amen.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, honey.
I'll know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.